Beathard sets up deep in the pocket. Goes down the field for Smith. Ah, he got it! Smith! Touchdown, 85 yards, Iowa!
56-yarder. It's got, no, does not have the leg. And Chris Davis takes it in the back of the end zone. He'll run it out to the 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45,
50, 45.
There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Don't miss a thing from the world of college football. Stay right here for College Gridiron on WFUV Sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into College Gridiron. Today is Wednesday, January 8th, 2025. That's as of the day of this recording. I am Tucker Austin, joined today by Jack Warner and Christopher Carino. Jack Warner, the man who attended the Heisman ceremony for us last year. Chris Carino, the man who joined me in attending the Heisman ceremony this season, along with Barrett Spreitzer, who's not here today. But before we get into it really quickly, guys, we'll start with Jack. How are you doing today, Mr. Warner?
I like the way that you keyed me in with the Heisman attendee, because it was fun watching you guys, you know, take the reins this year and go and do your thing at the ceremony. You know, I had some serious FOMO. It's great to be back on the show. I don't think I've done Gridiron since, like, They've had me with a lot of hockey and some NFL Fridays here and there, some nosebleeds throughout the World Series season. So I it's been a while since I've been on Gridiron. I've been jonesing to get back on here, especially come playoff time. So I'm excited to hop back on, especially with two huge games this week.
And then Chris, how are you feeling today?
Yeah, I'm feeling good. This is definitely one of the premier shows to be on, especially right now. The college football world is pretty crazy right now. The Final Four is very interesting. I would love to kind of get into it, especially we have Tucker here just on a bias level. You know, the Irish are represented. Unfortunately, most of the teams I don't like around the country are in this Final Four. So unfortunately for me, this might be a rougher four-team college football playoff. But I've really enjoyed it up to this point, specifically that Texas-Arizona State game, I think, was my favorite leading up now into this Final Four. So, yeah, really excited. And hopefully you get two really good games, deserve to get really two really good games after how, you know, exciting and fun this season has been up to this point.
Yeah, and especially with the way that some of the other CFP games have gone so far, we've been looking at a lot of two or three score blowouts, like kind of just running away with games. Like you said, the Texas ASU game was probably the best game out of the playoffs so far. And it actually got ranked by ESPN as one of the best games of the year, if not the best game of the year, just in terms of excitement. But before we get into the CFP semifinals that will take place on Thursday and Friday this week, I just wanted to touch quickly on the FCS National Championship, which took place this week. North Dakota State gets the win, 35-32, in a close one over Montana State. This game wasn't close at the start. North Dakota State wound up, I think they were ahead 21-0 in the first half at some point, but Montana State fought back. They came into the game at 15-0, but now North Dakota State has won 10 national championships at the FCS level in the past 14 seasons. No other FCS program has more than 6 national titles. Just an absolutely insane level of dominance from North Dakota State. And I guess I was just wondering if you guys had anything. I know it's the FCS, and we do mostly FBS content on this podcast, but I thought it would be good to, you know, get the national champion in. So, Chris, what do you think of North Dakota State? Do they belong in the FBS maybe?
That's interesting. I think that's a conversation similar to a lot of different ones in different leagues and different sports, where the lower league or the developmental league, the league right under the main one, if a team can emerge to where they belong, it's almost counterintuitive to add them. They have built a home in the FCS. They've built a niche in the FCS. It seems like they obviously have success with the 10 national champions. And just in general, there's an excitement that comes every year with being in the national championship conversation. rotation. That obviously would go away with FBS play. So I do think staying in the FCS is the move, and obviously it's worked out for them. They've been fantastic, not only if they had success, but they've had talent at the FCS level between Trey Lance, Carson Wentz. They've had players that they've been able to recruit and have be a part of their program and not have to worry about them leaving because of a transfer portal leave to, you know, compete for major FBS competition. You know, they're able to win a national championship in North Dakota State, and I don't really think you can offer that anywhere else except the FCS. So congratulations to North Dakota State. The FCS had a lot of good teams this year, and yeah, I think they'll stay in that niche for a long time, as I called it a few moments ago.
And what about you, Jack?
I pretty much agree with Chris. I think if we were having this conversation a few years ago, perhaps more pre-NIL, I think my take on it would have been a little bit different, because I think nowadays in college football, obviously recruiting is still important, being able to effectively recruit and being able to convince a prospective athlete that, you know, they should take a chance on your program and believe in your program. Yes, that's still important. But at the end of the day, college football is a lot more of a bidding war than it used to be, and a lot of schools are still kind of getting used to that. I think if we were talking a few years ago when North Dakota State was still the powerhouse that we know them to be in this year and that they proved again to be this year, I think maybe you would have had a different conversation about them moving up. But even still, for me, I don't know if this is going to come off as me, like, if this is going to come off as boring or me selling them short, but I think it's cool the reputation that they have in FCS, like being that premier program, being the same thing that we really all kind of liken, you know, we kind of liken them to Alabama during Nick Saban's tenure, you know, being that scary program that sets the stage for what a dominant, successful football program should be. So I understand people wanting them to move up to FBS, but there's, again, I think there's going to be a bit of a barrier for them in NIL production and just, you know, being able to recruit and, you know, alongside other Division I FBS programs that have already, you know, been able to recruit. But the other thing, again, is I think what they have in the FCS, that reputation, that dominance is really cool. And I think that they should, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I think continuing to be a dominant, you know, force in the FCS and, you know, being able to produce players who may eventually move up to the FBS, that's, I think, something as cool as being in the FBS. But lastly, I just thought from the game itself, I thought that the quarterback duel was really cool. I thought seeing Tommy Maillot, who was the, you know, the Walter Payton Award winner, and then seeing Cam Miller, who was the runner-up and probably had quite a bit of a chip on his shoulder going into that game, seeing them, you know, duel it out in this championship game, and they did not disappoint. I thought, you know, it was fun seeing, and it was cool seeing both O-lines, I thought, played pretty well. So both of them had some time to throw. Both of them had time to make plays, be, you know, offensive. But, you know, it was a back-and-forth game that came down, as you said, you know, to the final, you know, couple drives in the fourth quarter. I was very, very pleased. I was able to see most of the second half, but I was very pleased with what I saw. Very entertaining game. Probably the best college football, not college football playoff as in CFP, but college football playoff, like playoff season game I've watched so far, besides maybe Texas, Arizona State.
Yeah, and that Cam Miller certainly was a revenge game for him. I mean, 320-plus yards total offense, two passing touchdowns, two rushing touchdowns to take his North Dakota State team all the way to the promised land in the FCS. But now to the FBS, the bowl series. Bowl season is effectively over, guys. Just two bowls remain, and they are both part of the college football playoff. They're the semifinals that happen this week. So all of the rest of bowl season has now been fully wrapped up. And I just wanted to touch quickly on the bowl season, like, award. I think it's called the Bowl Challenge Cup, like kind of just the trophy that goes to the conference that had the best winning percentage in bowl games. But I don't want to highlight who won the Bowl Challenge Cup. I want to highlight who had the worst performance in bowl games this year, and it was the Atlantic Coast Conference. The ACC, pumped with some new teams from the West Coast, went 2-11 in their bowl performances this season, which I guess was technically better than the Mountain West or the Conference USA because they both went 1-4 in bowl games. But 2-11 is just egregious, especially for a Power Four conference. So, Chris, we'll start with you this time. What did you think of the ACC's underperformance this bowl season?
Yeah, when looking at this stat, I think first it jumps out at you, 11 ACC teams getting into a bowl game. I mean, that's impressive just at the surface of it. But then you think about the ACC, you think about the top of the ACC, obviously two teams in the playoff, they both not really having very impressive performances, especially SMU. I think that they had some trouble earlier in that game that kind of got in their way, and that game on the scoreboard was actually deceiving. I think it was a lot closer. But then, just at the top, Clemson loses that game to Texas. That's two of your best teams losing games. I think, when you're at the top, when you have teams at the top in the playoff losing like that, I think it could be a domino effect. And the bowl season was random. Miami could have had maybe a different case. Maybe Cam Ward would have played more than a half, and it could have changed things.
Jet.
I think what's funny about how poorly they did in their bowls this year is that it actually was a record year for them in making 11 bowls. To me, what I think this did, and I think a big thing that this points to is I go back to the conference realignment. Because what the conference realignment did, I think, and I think it was a very good service that it did, was it pointed out to me, I think, how protected a lot of teams were in the sense that they were playing the first couple games of their schedule against, there were a lot of buy-in games against smaller schools, and then they go right into the same conference schedule that they're used to playing every single year, in a very divided, geographically divided conference, conferences throughout the country. And what I think you saw proven with the ACC, and I don't know if it's true of every conference because I think the Big Ten got better, but I think the Big Ten is now neck and neck with the SEC after this year with the realignment. But I think what you saw with the realignment is how lopsided and how protected some schools were with the old way things went, where it felt like they were kind of doing the same thing every year. I think this year, once you saw schools have to play a little more of a loaded schedule, whether they had new teams coming into their conference or they played better out of conference games as well. I thought the out of conference games improved this year along with the conference realignment. I think what you saw there was some teams having kind of their true colors show. And I think, all these teams were able to make the bowls. And then once they got two bowl games and match up with somebody that, was also in the same position as them, they couldn't get the job done. I think the best story to come out of the ACC this year, besides Clemson, is Syracuse. And Syracuse won their bowl game. They had a fantastic year with Fran Brown in his first year at head coach. But I think what this did, and I think it'll work itself out in the next couple seasons. But I think what it did was this realignment showed which, schools and which conferences perhaps were kind of coasting before and now really do kind of have to buckle up and get ready to face, a little bit of more consistently difficult talent.
Yeah, and I thought the teams coming in would make the conference just a little bit stronger. I suppose SMU did manage to do that, but you look at your Cal and your Stanford, the other two schools that entered the ACC this year, they kind of just joined the pack in the middle of the ACC field, kind of just filling more of like mid teams that just beat each other repeatedly and don't really compete for the conference title. And I just think that their bowl, like the actual bowl lineup, is interesting, and like who they lost to, because it's really a medley of teams. There wasn't like one conference that had their number. They have a Mountain West loss, Big Ten, SEC, the MAC, the Sun Belt. They have an independent loss. They have a Big 12 loss. The ACC was losing to everybody this bowl season, and there was no way to slice it where the ACC looked good in any way this bowl season, postseason, I suppose you can call it, for everybody. But yeah, I think we'll just have to see as time goes on, because they are a Power Four conference. The top teams in the ACC always wind up being like mostly on par with the top teams from the other conferences. It'll just be about trying to see if those mid-level teams can start to make things interesting for the teams at the top, like your Miami, your Clemson, or maybe in a couple years, if they can figure out what is going on in Tallahassee. Florida State will probably be back eventually.
Oh my God, dude. That was unreal this year, man.
Yeah, I just insane levels of mediocrity. Not even mediocrity. That was even worse than mediocrity. That was just bad.
Real quick, what I'll say is the other, it was actually not too long ago. It was probably two, it was when the college football season like ended and headed into bowl season. I had a video show up on my Twitter feed that brought me to tears. Like I was crying, like real wet tears rolling down my face from laughter, because it was like a, it was a compilation of like all the low lights from this season with the tomahawk chop playing in the background, like the stadium pulse, like the stadium pulse sound. And I was just, I was hunched over
Oh
crying
God.
laughing. It was so funny. It was just interceptions and fumbles and awful plays for like 4 minutes.
Yeah, all highlighted by like the crowd going nuts. Although that crowd thinned quickly
Very
as the season
much.
went on.
Very much.
It's crazy to think, especially at this time in the season, that when we looked at the ACC, if we, didn't have any hindsight whatsoever at the beginning of the season, that, we'd almost forget about Florida State completely when talking about the ACC. That's crazy. And I think them, Syracuse and Miami, specifically those three teams, it's going to be so important for them to stay competitive because, as we knew, there was a stage there in the Dabo era where it was extremely uncompetitive in the ACC, and without those three teams and, throwing SMU in there to be the fourth, if those two through four schools and programs can't be competitive, it might be some trouble for the Atlantic Coast Conference.
And in the world of NIL, like you mentioned earlier, Jack, with Bill Belichick coming in at UNC, I feel like that also could probably like that could throw the Tar Heels into the mix in the ACC too. Like maybe not next year, but in the next few years, as Bill Belichick builds that program up, he'll certainly get an insane amount of like recruiting pull just from existing. And so like I definitely expect UNC to get a lot better within the next 5 years and probably be at the top of the ACC. But that wraps up our bowl season discussion. And now we get to the meat and potatoes of today's episode, the CFP semifinals. On Thursday night, 7:30 p.m., the Capital One Orange Bowl, number 7 Notre Dame versus number 6 Penn State. I have a lot of skin in this one personally because of Notre
Yes,
Dame
you do.
and because of my fandom for the Irish. I've been running with them all year. It's been a crazy ride since that Northern Illinois thing that happened. There was definitely a football game was played. But Jack, we'll start with you this time for this one. What are you looking at for Notre Dame versus Penn State tomorrow night?
Well, first of all, I think one of the biggest things that's going to be a game changer for Penn State, and I think is one of the things that they're going to have to work around, an absence that they're going to have to work around, is having no, well, actually, it's not official, but if they don't have him, if they do have him, not a 100% healthy Abdul Carter, who suffered an arm injury, or it was either his arm or his shoulder in the last game. But even though his status is kind of TBD right now, if he plays, who knows how effective he'll be. He's a corner piece of their, their defense. He's been such an effective edge rusher this year for them all season. I think the biggest thing for both of these teams is going to be, sticking with, to me, it's going to be sticking with the things that got them there. And I think for Notre Dame, it's going to be an effective ground attack. I think Jeremiah Love could be, in my opinion, could be sneakily the most valuable
player in the entire 12-team college football playoff. One of the most explosive rushers I've seen. And, you know, I think the other thing is, again, having Riley Leonard, who is able to not only, you know, have the efficiency through the air that he does, but is able, you know, is a Notre Dame quarterback rush single season rushing leader. I think their ground game is going to be huge. And I think that's going to be the thing that Penn State has to focus in on. I think they need to shut down the ground game. I think I wouldn't say that you let Notre Dame have the game through the air, because Riley Leonard is just a very versatile quarterback, but it's been clear since the start of these college football playoffs that Notre Dame's ground game is the most potent thing they have. And I think that's going to be the thing that you have to focus on shutting down. I think for Penn State, on the other hand, it's almost going to be the exact opposite. Yes, they have a effective ground game, but at the same time, you know, they are very effective through the air. Drew Aller hasn't put up crazy numbers, you know, during the college football playoff in terms of, you know, total offense. But at the same time, you know, he's always due to break out. You saw a great game from Tyler Warren last week when he pulled in two touchdown passes. So I think it's going to be whatever team shows up more defensively is going to be the team that wins this game. I know that sounds like a very Captain Obvious statement, but I do mean it, because you have two offenses here that I think at their best are very, very, very explosive. And it's going to come down to who can force a turnover in crunch time, who can, you know, have a big, you know, fourth down stand on fourth and one that changes the course of the game. Who's going to have that big defensive play that sets them up for success to win the game? Because I think this is going to be a really fun game to watch with two, you know, exciting quarterbacks and two exciting offenses.
And I like that you mentioned the turnovers, Jack, because Notre Dame has scored the most points off of turnovers in the FBS this season, like in a single season, since 2014. So no one has scored as many points off turnovers in 10 years since this Fighting Irish team. And I don't want to have to say it, but it really does feel like they need to turn Penn State over at least once, maybe twice, if they want to win this game handedly and not like by a last second field goal. Because, like, I mean, you look back to their game last week, and they had to turn them over. Like, they needed to get turnovers when they needed against Georgia, and they got the turnovers that they needed. But Chris, what did you think about Notre Dame and Penn State?
Yeah, I think, you know, initially that scares me, that, you know, you're in the last four teams and you need turnovers to win games. I think that at the surface probably isn't great. For this game, Penn State, Notre Dame, it's just two teams I just dislike. So it's kind of creating an issue for me, because it means either of them is going to beat the other to go to the national championship, which Penn State beating Notre Dame to go to the national championship is gross. And then vice versa is also gross. So I'm in a bit of a tough spot here. I think on the field, in between the numbers, I think both these teams' run games are super impressive. I actually think Penn State's is underrated. People don't talk about it enough. Their run game is extremely effective, especially in the two-back system they currently are in. And yeah, obviously on the other end, Jeremiah Love's been fantastic. I try to limit as much Irish football as I can possibly watch throughout the year, but I did watch the Indiana game. He was extremely effective. But I've also seen this Notre Dame team not be very good. Specifically, the Texas A&M game this year that opened up the season really scared me, and I felt like created a precedent for me the rest of the year and how much confidence I was going to have in them. Obviously, and the NIU game speaks for itself. I do think on a higher note, the Indiana game in the first round, Jeremiah Love showed me more effectiveness than I thought he had in that game, and he was really, really good. Specifically in this game, I think, as I said, the run games are relatively even. I think Penn State's run game might be even a slightly better. And when you even look at the last game, the Georgia game that Notre Dame played, I think scoring points is a bit of a problem. And if they can score points at a quick clip and, you know, at a quick frequency in this game, it'll help them a lot. And specifically from the Penn State perspective, you talked about Drew Aller, Will, or Jack. I do think that I think Drew Aller's overrated. I don't think he's very good. I saw someone in a mock draft yesterday have him at the third pick, the Giants pick, which I think would cause a riot in Manhattan.
I can tell you right now, the Giants fans that I know, and you, Tucker, and you, Chris, both know, at this radio station would not be happy with a Drew Aller draft pick.
No, absolutely not. No. And I think he's been underwhelming this year. I think he was a, you know, almost unbelievable high school prospect that hasn't lived up to it. But I also think it was almost impossible to live up to what he did in high school. One of the quarterbacks in the other semifinal game, I think, will actually be a starting quarterback in South Bend next year. But that's opinions for a conversation in a few moments. But I do think for this game, Penn State is a little more talented. Obviously, Abdul Carter, as Jack said, is such a big turning point and, you know, cornerstone for this Penn State team defensively. Specifically, that element matched with just overall Notre Dame not giving me a ton to trust them with in their last game against Georgia. I think it's Penn State, but again, you know, my dislike for both of these teams, I'm not super confident either way.
Yeah, in the least or in the most obvious game pick of all time, I'm gonna go with the Fighting Irish. I know you guys were on the edge of your seat waiting for me to
drop that one.
But yeah, like I said, I think it's gonna be the Notre Dame's gonna have to force a turnover, ideally early to swing the score in their favor, because we saw in the Penn State game against Boise State, when they get their punches in early and they can get out in front to double digit lead, it kind of becomes hard to work against Penn State's defense, especially like when you need multiple scores, it's not easy to score against that defense in any way, shape, or form. Penn State needs to contain Riley Leonard. Like, if he gets out of the pocket, all hell will break loose in this game. And Jeremiah Love is going to be my X factor, because I think, like, if he can make an impact on this game, like he has in the past two games against Indiana and against Georgia, he can take the pressure off of Notre Dame's passing game and maybe off of Riley Leonard's legs a little bit, trying to keep him fresher so he can go the distance. Notre Dame just needs to stick to their game plan. If they move the ball effectively like they have the past two games, Mitch Jeter has been incredibly consistent for them in getting 3 points pretty much whenever they need, sort of inching their leads forward instead of like getting those huge explosive punches in. But, you know, death by a thousand paper cuts. And if Notre Dame can win in the trenches and just move the ball mostly efficiently against this Penn State defense, obviously the Abdul Carter call at the end of this week or before game time will be huge. But give me the Fighting Irish. And we'll move on to the second of two semifinal games. Friday night, 7:30 p.m., the Goodyear Cotton Bowl between number 8 Ohio State and number 5 Texas. Now, this one, I think, if the first game was a defensive, like, battle in the trenches type game, I think this is going to be your shootout. This will be your complete offensive explosion game, because Ohio State's playing their best offensive football. I think they've been playing all year. So, Chris, we'll start with you on this one. What are your thoughts on Ohio State versus Texas?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I think at the surface and on paper, just looking at, you know, the last two games both of these teams have played specifically, I think Ohio State is the easy choice. I think, though, when looking at their head coach and just looking at their recent success, I think it would be also smart to say that, you know, it's a realistic chance that they can blow it in these next two games. They're almost so far and away the leaders here, so far and away the favorites, that it is the spot where Ryan Day would be uncomfortable. But I think on paper, where is the place that we have to stay here the most, Ohio State is by far the better team here. Texas really scared me in the last round. Arizona State is a team that should nowhere near a competitive game with Texas, and they did more than a competitive game. I think they honestly outplayed them for almost two quarters of that game. So Yeah, that scares me and the Texas faithful for sure. I think Quinn Ewers is Notre Dame's next starting quarterback. That's what I was alluding to earlier. So I think, you know, on a level of Texas legacy, he wants to leave it all on the line here. I also think if he throws a couple picks in the first half, he might get pulled out of the game, which, you know, I'm in favor of, just wanting to get, you know, an exciting Archie moment out of this game. But I do think from, you know, the Jeremiah Smith, Judkins, Will Howard perspective, I think this one could be a route for sure, especially Jeremiah Smith. I think the best player in the country, barring no age. I just think, you know, looking at college football, he is the best individual player.
I'm excited to watch the matchup between Jeremiah Smith and Matthew Golden, not lining up against each other, but they both are obviously wide receivers, but watching them on both of their possessions to see if one will outplay the other. Maybe Matthew Golden has like 150, 180 yard receiving day and just blows Jeremiah Smith out of the water. And that's the reason why Texas wins this game. It's going to be really cool to see all of the talent all over the field. But Jack, what are your thoughts on Texas, Ohio State?
So remember when I said Jeremiah Love is sneakily the most reliable, I mean, the most, the biggest asset in the college football playoff? I lied.
Yeah.
It's the other Jeremiah. It's Jeremiah Smith. No, I mean, think about this for a second. Two college football playoff games for him. He's coming off 13 catches for 290 yards. I think he'd be without a doubt, if he was eligible, I think he'd be without a doubt the runaway number one pick this year if he were eligible. I completely agree that this is going to be, I think, more of a shootout type game. I think Ohio State has a bit of the edge, and I say that just because I'm looking more momentum. I don't think it's a matter of Ohio State being such a way better team than Texas is. In fact, I think Ohio State is playing better than they really are right now. I think they're on a hot streak. And similar to Chris, this game makes me want to gouge my eyes out. I hate both teams. I don't hate Texas nearly as much as I hate Ohio State, though. I don't like Texas, but I don't. But I mean, you know, I'm a Michigan fan. So, at the end of the day, I'll probably, you know, it scares me that Ohio State has the momentum that they have right now to go and uneven the tally, because it was nice for Michigan to tie the national championship tally up at one. But you know, there's a genuine chance that Ohio State goes and unevens the tally this year under Ryan Day leadership, which would suck. But at the end of the day, I can't, you know, I can't fault college football for giving them the trophy, you know, the NCAA for giving them the trophy the way that they're playing. But I think this is going to come down to a more shootout type game. As you guys mentioned, Matthew Golden has been super fun to watch, and I think is going to be the real showdown of these two semifinal games, aside from obviously, you know, Quinn Ewers and Will Howard, which I think will be a fun matchup. But no, I think this is going to come down to, you know, two phenomenal pass, you know, offenses. And also the Longhorns, if they want to win this game, it's going to have to come down to them having that pass defense that has done them so well to this point in the season. But I do have Ohio State winning in an absolute shootout, and it being a Notre Dame Ohio State national championship, which would be bonkers. 38-31 would be my score choice.
This is such a weird one, like, just because of how good Ohio State is coming into this game. And the problem is, like, Chris, I have to agree with you, and I agree with the same sentiments from Jack. Like, this Texas team just hasn't looked that great the last couple times we've seen them out. Meanwhile, Ohio State just dumped 41 points on the one seed in the entire playoff. Whether or not Oregon should have been the one seed is an entirely different conversation. Ohio State still dropped 41 points on them, and a team that didn't give up that many points a lot this season. So I think Ohio State is definitely in better form coming into this game. They're here to prove themselves a little bit too, because of all of the storylines going on this season, and with Ryan Day about his dealings with Michigan over his career. But I think it's going to be Quinshon Judkins and Travion Henderson who really make the biggest impact on this game. They had 150 yards between the two of them last time out for Ohio State. So look to them to put this game away if OSU can get up early. But Quinn Ewers just needs to take care of the football. We saw issues with that in the regular season game against Georgia. We saw it in the Red River rivalry against Oklahoma. When Ewers doesn't take care of the football, things start to go haywire for the Longhorns very fast. And if he throws like two interceptions in the first half, we may very well see Arch Manning, Chris. So maybe you will get a little bit of Arch content, but maybe not. You can't give anything to this Ohio State team because they will pounce on it every single play. They're waiting for you to make a mistake. So give me Ohio State. But that just about wraps up our show for today. The two college football semifinal games that will be played later this week, Thursday, 7:30, the Capital One Orange Bowl, Notre Dame versus Penn State, and Friday at 7:30, the Goodyear Cotton Bowl between Ohio State and Texas. And for Chris Carino and Jack Warner, and for our sports director here at WFUV, Bobby Chaffardini, I have been Tucker Austin, and you have been listening to College Gridiron, a production of WFUV Sports. We'll be right back.